Beis Hashem, I had the tzus this morning to daven in a shul called Oyel Torah, I think Ohalei Torah, Oyel Torah, and they tell me this is the shul of Dayan Weiss. Can you put the microphone closer? Can I hold it in my hand?
Yes, I'll pick up.
Okay, so I daven this morning in the shul that Dayan Weiss used to be.
I'll pick up, sir.
The rav of the shul. There's a story with Dayan Weiss when he was younger. He was in a place called near Pressburg. He lived in a shtetl near a place called Pressburg. And when the Nazis this story is told over by Rav Elimelech Biderman. And when the Nazis invaded, the people in the shtetl had no idea who they are, and what they're all about. So they sent him as a boy to the nearby town of Pressburg, that he should speak to the Rosh HaKohol of Pressburg and check out, and find out and come back and let them know. And he came, and he went and he spoke with the Rosh HaKohol. The Rosh HaKohol told him exactly who the Nazis are, what they're all about, Yimach Shemam V'Zichrom, and that the situation is very not good. At the same time, he told Dayan Weiss that he's received, the King of England wishes to save 1,000 children. And he sent 1,000 tickets in order to save children, young boys and girls. And he doesn't know, the Rosh HaKohol has tickets, he doesn't know who to give them to. How can he single out this one, yes, and this one not? But if you're here already, he says, I'll give you a ticket. And he gave him a ticket. And then Dayan Weiss came back, and he came back to his family and his shtetl, and he told them what the Rosh HaKohol had said. And his parents said, you must take this transport and go and be saved. And that's what he did. And he went on the transport, and he came to England. And he was saved together with 999 other children. A few weeks later, the King of England wanted to see the children that he had saved. So he had the children all line up on two sides, and he rode his carriage through all these children. This is a true story that Dayan Weiss would tell over himself. And he rode his carriage through the children on both sides, and Dayan Weiss was standing not too far from this child who did the following bold thing. A child who was standing not far from Dayan Weiss suddenly jumped up onto the king's carriage, and he wanted to speak to the king, and he started talking. And of course the bodyguards and people next to the king took him and were ready to throw him off, but the king said, leave him. He obviously has something important to say. And he spoke and he said, Your Majesty, you've done such a kindliness. The kindliness you've done here is beyond words, beyond description. What can I say? You saved all of us children. our gratitude is, we can't describe, how can we describe gratitude for saving our lives? But I'm still very sad. My happiness is incomplete, because my parents are still there, and I'm here. So the king said to him, what's your name, your family name? He gave his name, and 2 weeks later, these boys' parents came to England, and their lives were saved. So Dayan Weiss said, we learn from this two very important lessons. We learn from this lesson number one. He was speaking specifically about times like Aseres Yimei Tshuva. In those times, the Yeshua Hashem Behima Tza'oi Kira'uhu B'Yaisai Karoiv, Hashem is close. At certain times, if the king would have been in his palace, it would have been much harder to get through to him. But here the king was between all the children. He was right there. All one needed to do was to jump up and take advantage of the situation. Excuse me. The second message that he said was that one needs chutzpah. Chutzpah. the chutzpah to not be embarrassed and ashamed to ask the king for what you need. And this child was the only one out of 999 children that had the chutzpah to ask. And he's the only one from the 999 children whose parents were saved by the King of England. So it's a very important lesson for us to learn. I will share with you something else fascinating that Rabbi Biederman says. Someone once came to Rav Shach, this is not from Rabbi Biederman, and he had a book which taught how to read palms. There's a science called palm reading. And you can look at the lines on the palm of one's hand and to know from that many, many different things about a person's life. You can know what he's like, you can know what has happened to him, and you can even know what's going to happen according to the nature of things, according to the Derech HaTeva. That's what they say. One of our students once had his palm analyzed. I had a school in Jerusalem for many years, and parents came to us about one of the students who we were having difficulties with, very chutzpahdik, and they said they brought him to a palm reader who says that this boy has a line of rebellion which is very, very strong. The palm reader is afraid of this line of rebellion on the child's hand. How do we deal with it? So somebody came to Rav Shach, and he said that he's learned the science of palm reading, and as far as he can understand, this was an elder bacher, he wasn't married. And as far as he can understand, he looked at his palm and he has no future in shiduchim. So he came to Rav Shach and he asked him, how could I break the gzar din? So Rav Shach told him, the palm reading works according to the Derech HaTeva. If you believe in it, you are controlled by it. And if you don't believe in it, you are above it. Our student, who was analyzed to have a very strong line of rebellion, is today a Baki B'Shas. I think he's been through Shas 4 times with Rishonim. You can take a pin, stick it into a Gemara, and open it up in certain Masechtes. I don't know if Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, and he will continue from where the pin is stuck, by heart. Not only that, they say he'll be one of the Gedolei Hador. That's what they say. He's an amazing young man, but he took this koyach, and he harnessed it to finish all of Shas, and to be the massive Talmud Chacham that he is. One of the people who is a Talmud Chacham and does read palms said something, which this is what I wanted to share with you, Rabbi Biederman does bring. He said that during, from the time of Rosh Hashanah till Aseres Yimei Tshuva, he does not read people's palms. Why not? So when I first read this, I thought because it's not a time. It's a time when he wants to do tshuva, not a time when he wants to be busy with people. No, no. He said that because the lines in the palm constantly change during Aseres Yimei Tshuva. So there's nothing to read. From Rosh Hashanah through Yom Kippur, it's always changing. So we are a people that are not governed by the Derech HaTeva. We're not. Derech HaTeva, if you wish to be, you can place yourself under the Derech HaTeva, but you don't have to. My Rosh Yeshiva, I learned in a yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael called Kol Yaakov in Beit Vegan. It's a Sephardi yeshiva that they had for a very long time, Sephardim and Ashkenazim together, up until recently. And Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky came to visit Kol Yaakov Yeshiva about 35 years ago, something around that time, and he said, Kol Yaakov Yeshiva is the first yeshiva Mashiach will visit, because they have Sfardim and Ashkenazim together. It's a very special thing, unique. In yeshiva, when I was a bacher, our Rosh Yeshiva came over. There's a famous mekubal today, maybe you heard of him, Rabbi Yaakov Addis. This is his father. the Rabbi, the Rosh Yeshiva. So I was in Yeshiva with the famous Mekubal Rabbi Yaakov Adis together. So he came up to Kriyas HaTorah, and he said, he got an aliyah, and before they started reading the Torah, before he made his bracha, he stopped the Kriyas HaTorah. And he's told over, in front of the entire yeshiva, he felt this was urgent enough to stop the entire yeshiva. And he made an announcement that parents had come to him for a four-year-old child that had Yena Machla, and there was no hope. The doctors had given up hope for this child. And the Rosh Yeshiva said that the entire yeshiva should accept upon themselves to make a Tainis Dibur. Tainis Dibur is when you only speak words of Torah and Tefillah throughout the entire day. And the entire yeshiva accepted. I participated in this Tainis Dibur. 2 weeks later, the Rosh Yeshiva came back, he got another aliyah, and on Shabbos he announced in front of the entire yeshiva that the parents came to him and the boy has been cured entirely. The machla has vanished. This is not one story. These are ma'asim b'kol yoyim. Stories that we hear all of the time. Rav Zilberstein tells over about a bacher that had to be taking, he was not well, he had the machla, and he had to be taking treatments. So he came to the hospital, and for the first time he came, I think, the first time I believe he came for his treatments, he wanted to make sure that he would be able to wear tzitzis during the treatments. So he specifically prepared a clean pair of tzitzis that he washed and carefully put it in a bag that it would be sterile. And he brought it together with him. And he sat waiting near the room for his treatments. The nurse came in, she spoke with him. She said to him, you know, you have to take off your garments for this treatment. He says, I brought with me a pair of tzitzis, specially clean and sterilized, that I can wear. And she said to him, no, you can't wear anything. No tzitzis from your home. None of this stuff. It is not. You can't wear this. And it didn't hurt the treatment in any way. This is not an x-ray or a scan of some sort. This is a simple treatment. But the nurse apparently didn't like these religious types of things. And she was very upset. You're not doing the treatment. He says, I'm not going in without my tzitzis on. I'm sorry, I will not sit without my tzitzis. So he stayed outside. He said, stay outside if you wish. And he was outside, I believe, for a few hours. And a doctor passed by at one point, and he said to this young man, why are you outside? What's the problem? He told him the problem, and the doctor said, let me see what I can do. He went inside, and he came out a short while later, and he was screaming. He was all emotional. He says, you don't know what you've just done. Your tzitzis have saved your life. Because the nurse was mistakenly putting together the wrong ingredients in the treatment, and it would have killed him. And because he was so insistent that he wear tzitzis, therefore he didn't go in and didn't have the treatment done, and he was saved. This is the story Rav Zilberstein brings in his book. But the boy responded with a letter which Rav Zilberstein brings in one of his later books. He says, Rav Zilberstein, you didn't tell the end of the story. The end of the story is that the boy became completely cured from the machla after that incident. It went away. He was in total remission. We live shelo kederach hateva. The way Yidden work is not derach hateva. The goyim can work shelo kederach hateva. We work differently. I have to share with you something I heard very recently from Reb Tzvi Meyer Zilberberg. And I shared it with the boys that I spoke yesterday, last night. But it's a fascinating thing. Reb Gershon Edelstein brings in his Darkei HaChizuk. He says that the difference between a goy, and he quotes his father, I don't know the source for this, and I've never heard this before, but he quotes his father, who was the father of Rav Gershon and Rav Yankov Edelstein, Rav Gershon Yibadal L'chaim. So he said, his father said, a goy has only a guf and a nefesh. A yid has a neshama. A goy does not have a neshama. That's what he said. And Reb Tzvi Meir said over something fascinating. He knows someone that works with Geirim, and this person, Geirim, when they are learning to become Geirim, and they have not yet gone through a conversion, the Geirim still practice all the mitzvahs. Because if they're going to become, do the conversion process, that moment they become Yidden, and they're not going to know what to do. They're not going to be used to doing what they have to do. So we need them to get the proper habits developed before they convert. So they're davening, they're saying brachas, they're keeping Shabbos while they're going. Of course, they're machal Shabbos in one little way, akum sheshavas chayav misa, but they're taught that, otherwise they keep Shabbos. And he's shown, this fellow that works with Gerim has shown this phenomenon to Rabbonim, it's not to be believed. They've seen Gerim davening mincha as goyim, converting, and then davening Mayriv as Yidden. And he says you have to see it, not to be believed. The Geirim, when they're Goyim and are davening Mincha, they stand still like a stone. And their Misgayer in between, comes Mayriv, they're shaking back and forth. And they don't even know that they're shaking back and forth. That's the Neshama. They received in between Mincha Mayriv. It's a good thing to do between Mincha Mayriv if you have some time. Get a Neshama, why not? They get a neshama, and now they're davening Mayriv with a neshama. And the neshama is moving them back and forth. The neshama with the fire and the bren of Kedusha, that's moving the body back and forth. It doesn't let the body stand still when you're davening to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's very clear, the difference between us and the goyim. How the goyim are governed by the Derech HaTeva, and we are a nation L'mayla miderech hateva. The title of this shir is Allow Emunah to Sweeten Your Life. And this is the first place to bring Emunah into your life, is to turn to the, use some chutzpah and turn to the Ribbono Shel Olam more and more and more. And I don't only mean turn to the Ribbono Shel Olam during Shacharis Mincha and Mayriv or during Tehillim. I mean to use your own words and daven to the Ribbono Shel Olam in your own words. I can't tell you how many fascinating stories I've heard. I'd like to share with you some of them. But stories that are not to be believed that I've been either a part of or have heard them firsthand. I'll share with you a story from a friend of mine. He used to live in my neighborhood in Yerushalayim. And he came to us, the neighborhood then, it's a neighborhood, perhaps you've heard of it, it's called Neve Yaakov. It's a neighborhood of just the power of L'mayla Miderech HaTeva. I'll share with you something else I remembered. Please forgive me. I have a Kabbalah that I heard from Reb Shalom Shvadron, who heard from Reb Ella Lapian, that if you remember something, it's a sign Hashem wants you to share it at that moment. So I'll give you the thing I remembered before I tell you the Neve Yaakov story. And this is apparently something Hashem wants you to know, because He put it in my head as I'm speaking with you. So, not that the other things Hashem doesn't want you to know. But we know a neighbor of ours. There was a time in Eretz Yisrael, around the time, I believe, that Rav Shach passed away. It was about 14 years ago. And at that time, there were a lot of terrorist attacks going on in Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. And the neighborhood we live in then was more in a precarious situation, because near us is an Arab place called Shoafat Beit Hanina. And the buses pass by at French Hill, are the buses that take you from Neve Yaakov to town, to Geula and to all those, Bar Ilan, all those places. They pass by at French Hill, they pass by this Arab village, Beit Hanina Shoafat. So, if you heard of Ramat Shlomo, it wasn't there at that time, I don't think, and so on. Berech. Kitzer, so one of our neighbors told us that they heard there's a big segula. If you want to protect your family, there's a big segula to say Kriya Shema at night, Kriya Shema Lamita, to say with a lot of kavana, all three parshiyos. And she started doing it, all three parashiyas of Kriya Shabbat Kavana, dafka at that time. It's very possible that the first time she ever did it was the night before what I'm about to tell you. So in the morning, she was on the 25 bus with her two little children, a three-year-old girl and a five-year-old girl. And an Arab jumped out of the, right near the French Hill bus route. An Arab jumped out from Shuafat and started shooting at the bus. And everyone lied down on the floor so they should not be in the range of the shooting. He was shooting at the windows. And she grabbed her three-year-old girl, I'm not mistaken, and she grabbed her and she lied down, and people were piling on top of each other. It was an absolute panic and pandemonium. In the middle of all the tumult and the panic, she forgot about her five-year-old girl. So her five-year-old girl was left standing in front of the window of the bus as the Arab is shooting at all the windows. Two people were killed in that terrorist attack, a young girl of 16, a Frum girl, and a 13-year-old boy. And this lady's daughter is standing right in front of the window, nothing, no protection. She told us after this attack, they looked at the windows of the bus, and the only window that had no marks, no scratches, no bullet marks, was that window that the girl was standing in front of. Nothing happened to that girl. I told this story over in Lakewood, and a few weeks later, someone came over to I have a son, two sons in Lakewood. One son, someone came over to me, to my son, and said, "Tell your father the following," because I had recommended that people start saying Kriya Shema with Kavana as a skula for your family, why not? And someone came over to my son and told him that she took it very seriously. She started saying Kriya Shema with Kavana. And I think a few days later, someone was pulling a car out of a driveway. I don't know how you say driveway in England, but he was pulling the car out of a driveway, and he felt something at the tire of the car. So he stopped the car, he got out, and it was this woman's baby that was crawling around in the driveway. He didn't see the baby. And nothing happened because he stopped right away, straight away. So you have Rabbi Yisai, the Lamaila Miderech HaTeva, in ways that we can't believe. So let me get back to the Neve Yaakov story. My friend came to me Leil Rosh Hashanah. He was in a very, very distressed state. "Rabbi Brizak, you have to help me. What's the problem?" He says, "His wife is irate and he's done a terrible thing. He does not know what to do. He left the light on in the bedroom and his wife can't sleep with the light on. It's the night of Rosh Hashanah. The next day you're going to be standing, davening for a long time, and she can't sleep the entire night because he left the light on. She's livid. She is so angry at him. What can I do to save his shalom bayis?" So I didn't know what to tell him. We tried going to look together for an Arab. At that time they were Arab. They were building the neighborhood. Today it's already built up. But we thought maybe we'd find an Arab, we'd hint to him, he would come, shut off the light. We couldn't find any Arabs. And we came back, and my poor friend went, and he had his Yom HaDin a little bit earlier than the rest of the neighborhood. I called upon him, I did see him a few days later, and I did meet him a few years later. He no longer lives in Neve Yaakov, and he verified the story for me exactly as I tell it over, with a few minor adjustments, which I've adjusted already. And I met him a few days later. Surprisingly enough, he was still alive. Baruch Hashem. Not only he was in a good mood, and I was really not understanding what's going on. But what's going on? How did you survive this incident? So he says, "I'll tell you the truth. I didn't have any. I had no eitzah, no place to turn. I went straight into that room. I stood next to the light bulb, and I said, 'Hashem, save me.'" It's the three words. And nothing happened. You ready to hear a yes? And the light bulb burst, and everybody lived happily ever after. No, that's nothing happened. So my friend went into the other room. He was zubrochen. He was broken. And he tells me that there was suddenly a power failure and all the lights went out. Now this part is hard to believe. I heard it firsthand, and he was alive and in a good mood. He tells me that all the lights went on a few minutes later, except for that light. It stayed off the entire Rosh Hashanah. Now I told this story over in Shul, where I live, in the Ve'yakov on a Shabbos Shuvah a number of years ago. And in the morning, an elderly rabbi comes to me. It's Brizak. I never listen to these drushes, you know, in the shul. They don't interest me. But that story with the light bulb, you have to hear this. I came home, and I was so taken with the light bulb story. I said, light bulb, light bulb, light bulb. And my wife says, light bulb? I said, yes, light bulb. You have to hear the light bulb, light bulb. And she screams, light bulb. What happened? She forgot to turn off the light bulb in the refrigerator, and she was about to take out the grape juice for Kiddush. So because she heard the word light bulb, so she didn't open the refrigerator, and she wasn't Bechal Shabbos. So my friend's tefillah, three words, has been traveling around the street where we live. Can I help you? Can I help you? Actually, it's been inspiring tens of thousands of people around the world. Three words. Hashem, save me. That's all. A person has to have, please, Rabbi Yisai, don't settle. Don't settle for difficult situations. Don't give up and don't despair when things are going very not well. Because you can daven. You can daven and you can daven. And now you tell me that you've davened and nothing has been forthcoming, no changes. I want you to know something. Davening doesn't mean once, and it doesn't mean twice. There's a Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael, a Rebbe, called the Mevakshe Emuna Rebbe. He's, I believe, a brother of the Toldos Avraham Yitzchak and Toldos Aaron today, or a nephew. I think he's a brother. He didn't have children for 30 years. Rabbi Yisai, 30 years without children. He went to a very big mekubal, a genuine mekubal. And the genuine Makubal told him, I don't know why he would do such a thing, but he told him, I promise you that you will never have children. He didn't say Bli Nedes. I don't know exactly how it works. Can you imagine? There are people that can see things. Last week I asked someone, we had a very, very serious issue, and we needed someone who can see things. And we sent him to Rabbi David Abu Chatzera, down near Netivot, if you heard of him. This fellow goes to him often, as Rabbi David can see things. I've gone to a big tzaddik in Bnei Brak called Reb Shimon Galai, happens to be my Edim's uncle. And I show him names, and he looks at these names, and he tells me all about the person. He's never seen the people in his life. And this is a genuine tzaddik. He's a dayan on Reb Nissen Karelitz, he's based in. You're not talking about some people. Reb Chaim, I tell you stories about Reb Chaim, not going to just waste your time, Chas V'Shalom, but a recent story, I have a friend of mine whose wife had to go through an operation. She had an operation last week or the week before. She had a very large growth. They had to remove it. B'chaste Hashem, it was benign, but the operation was a dangerous operation. So they had a shaila how to go about the operation. And this is the third time she has this growth. It's come back three times. So she didn't want to make the operation anymore. Why make an operation which is dangerous and it'll come back a fourth time? So we went to Reb Chaim. I'm close with one of the mishpacha there. It was a big Talmud Chacham, and he's with Reb Chaim very often, every day in the mornings. Kitzer, so they asked Reb Chaim to make the operation. They're afraid it'll come back. Reb Chaim said it's not going to come back. That's what Reb Chaim said. So people know certain things. So this Mevakesh Emuna Rebbe, Mevakesh Emuna, he went to Mekubal, who told him, that's it. He also went to one of the big tzaddikim, like Reb Chaim, like Reb Galai, those types of tzaddikim, and he said, listen, I don't see in your future any children. I don't see. Talmidim, you'll have Talmidim, Talmidim Harehim Kibanim, so what do you need children for? You have Talmidim, they're also like children. The Mevakshe Emuna Rebbe didn't care. Not what the Mekubal said, and not what the Tzaddik said, and not that it's 30 years already. 30 years he's davening. How much can you daven? A week? A month? A half a year? A year? 5 years? 30 years he's davening. So he said, I'm not davening enough. So he decided to go every day to Kever Rachel and to daven, say all Sefer Tehillim every day. I think he went Vasikin. And 6 years ago, which was 32 years, he had twin girls. So Rabbi Yisai, if people tell me they daven and it doesn't work, ask them, have they davened for 32 years and said Sefer Tehillim every day at Kever Rachel? Ask them. I don't have time on the Beseder, no problem. I have no complaints against you. But you don't know how powerful tefillah is. And you have to harness it to our favor. We never, ever have to despair. We never, ever have to get depressed. And we never, ever have to give up. In fact, we never have to be sad. Because we can always turn to Hashem and we can always ask Him, yes, it's a chutzpah. A chutzpah, Hashem gives me so much and I don't deserve it. But that's what Hashem wants from us. I once asked Reb Chaim Kanievsky, I tell people to daven for everything they want, even mundane things. I even tell children in the middle of games to daven that, in the middle of a football game, daven you should make a goal. Is that right? Tell people to daven for every little thing? Aside that, it's a Mefurash Rabbeinu Yonah in Mishlei. Look on the Pasuk, B'chol Derechecha Da'eu, or right nearby in the same parak, there's an Arichas Dela from Rabbeinu Yonah. Aside from that, he says some people only daven for the big things, the little things they don't want, they don't. Reb Chaim told me these words. It's a kasha from a Gemara, but I'm not going to go into the kasha. He said, Azoy Firtman. This is the Yiddish Aminik. Azoy, these are Reb Chaim's words. That's our custom. Harchev picha va'amal ehu. That's what Reb Chaim told me. Open your mouth wide. Hashem is waiting for you to open your mouth and daven. I've told people all over the world to daven. A few weeks ago, I was passing by the Mir. I give a shir in the Mir once a week for Avreichim and on Chinuch. And somebody passed Rabbi Brizak. I was at your, when you spoke 10 years ago in South Africa. I was there and you said to daven, and I davened. And I think it worked. I once spoke in a school in Miami, Florida, for teachers. And I came back 9 years later. I said to daven, and one of the secular teachers, not religious, came over to me and said to me that from that day, she prays every day before she goes to school that she shouldn't hurt any of the children in any way. You know the power of davening? Someone told me, one of the women in our workshops shared with me the following incident. And she said the following, that her son has a very high-pitched voice and it doesn't carry so well, so they don't hear her. They don't hear him so well in the shul. And he was going to be bar mitzvah. And to be bar mitzvah in that shul, they only let you read the Torah if you have a voice that everyone can hear, of course, and that people have to be Yotzi Kriyas HaTorah. They were hoping that his voice would be loud enough, and he prepared, I think for a year, taking bar mitzvah lessons to know the Kriya, to know it well. Came the week before his bar mitzvah, and he contracted pneumonia. That he couldn't talk at all. Even when he spoke, he had no voice. The voice vanished. So he came to the bar mitzvah teacher Friday before his bar mitzvah, and he says, the bar mitzvah teacher told the parents, called the parents, he said, listen, he can't read. Tell them in the shul, get him a replacement. And the parents said, we can't do it. It'd be too devastating. What? He's preparing an entire year, we're going to tell him. Comes Shabbos night, Friday night, and the boy's bar mitzvah, he's supposed to lead the mezuman. Last night at the bar mitzvah I was at, the Zayda tells me, really the bar mitzvah boy does the mezuman, but he's not bar mitzvah yet till tonight. Friday night, the boy comes to make a mezuman, and he has no voice. He couldn't say Rabbi Yisai Nevorech. And the parents were hysterical. I heard this story from the mother, and I verified it just to make sure a few weeks ago. It happened a year ago in Cheshvan, this month, if I'm not mistaken. So the parents were hysterical, and they started davening their heads off. They started really davening and really davening. The next morning they prepared the gabayim. We don't know what's going to be. Let's try. The boy gets up to read the Torah. Remember, he had a high-pitched voice that was not very loud. Then he has no voice. He gets up to read the Torah. All of a sudden he has this very deep, very loud voice. And he read the whole Torah like that. Rabbi Sai, since then he has this very deep, loud voice. I checked it out with the mother just a few weeks ago. Hashem gave him a bar mitzvah present, a new voice. You hear this? I'm telling you firsthand. The koyach of tefillah is lo yi'uman ki yisupar. I have to share with you one more thing. I don't want to go over time. I'll try to conclude. I'll tell you two quick stories. B'chol zois. One story we tell over. We have what we call pet tohar. We send out an email every week to about 3,000 people about stories about oinuas devarim, how not to hurt other people's feelings, to tell over at your Shabbos table for your children with questions to ask. It's an entire program. It's called Peh Tohar. If you wish to receive it, you can email us at pehtohar@gmail.com. P-E-H-T-A-H-O-R. pehtohar@gmail.com. We told her the following story 2 weeks ago that I heard from Rabbi Ephraim Waxman in his Tshuva Drasha this year. Before Yom Kippur, I think I heard this a day before Erev Yom Kippur. Rabbi Waxman tells over, and I received an email the next week, which was the following week, I think 3 weeks ago and 2 weeks ago. So 2 weeks ago I received an email from someone who said he really liked that story. And then he adds, the one in the story is his mother. So it's a real, genuine story. A woman came to register her daughter at the Beis Yaakov. This is in New York. She's sitting in the Beis Yaakov office waiting to register her daughter. In comes a modern lady who's dressed more modern. You see, she's not... This is a very religious school, very Haredi, ultra-Orthodox school. And this lady, you can see, she's not holding with the standard of the school. So the first lady, let's call her Rachel. Rachel goes over to this lady, says, "Excuse me, but you know, this school is really not for you. You're going to be in this school with your daughter. You're going to have to follow very strict rules of tznius. And it's a very religious, ultra-Orthodox, Haredi school. Not really for you. I don't think you're making a big mistake." And the lady said, "Yes? Oh, okay." And she got up and she left. In the meantime, Rachel is thinking, "What did I do? This lady... Maybe she would have sent her daughter to the school, and the daughter would have become more from, and she'd be machzir the whole family b'tshuva. Who knows? Maybe the family would have become more from. What did I do?" And she ran out to try to find the lady. She could not find her. So this lady, Rachel, from that day on, every single day, she was said, "Vidui, ya'atz nura." And she cried and she davened for this girl who she never met. She only met her mother. She didn't even know who this girl was, where she was, what she does, but she's davening every day, "Hashem, please help this girl." For 15 years. Rabbi Yisai, 15 years. And she met the mother 15 years later. She was somewhere, and she saw this lady who looked very familiar. She suddenly remembered, or she met, and she, "Are you the lady that..." Barak, this is how the story goes. "Are you the lady that 15 years ago..." "Yes, yes." "You don't know, I'm davening for your daughter for 15 years. Your aunt's the right, say vidui every day. How could I have done what I did? I can't believe it." And she said, and the lady says, "Oh, now I understand. We never could figure out, where did this girl come from? She covers her hair. She married Koilel. She's so religious. And she doesn't fit into our family. How did she become like that? Now I know the reason." Rabbi Sai, the power of tefillah. The power of tefillah. Please don't let it go by unseized. Please, in your own words, say tefillahs for the things you want. Not once, and not twice. 15 years. 32 years. It depends how much you want it. It's not worth 32 years of davening. Okay? to the Mevakshei Emunah Rebbe, so two children was worth 32 years of davening. For this lady, that this girl should be Erlich, was worth 15 years of davening. But there's another point here, and I'll conclude after this with one story. Hashem arranged this. Besides tefillah, there's something called emunah. It means when things go wrong, it's not a mistake. It's a design. Things go wrong with a plan. And the plan is for your hatzlacha. Here, what happened? Here's the lady, she made such a mistake. How could she go over to this lady and send her out? But look what happened retroactively. What happened here is that because she sent the lady out, so she davened for 15 years for this girl, and the girl, if she would have gone to the school, the girl would never have become so religious. The girl would never have become so successful. She might have even gotten kicked out of the school. Or maybe the mother would have taken her out a few months later, or a little while later, because she realized it's not for me. But Hashem arranged that she should tell her, and she should leave, and she should feel bad, and she should daven. And this way the girl became a wife of a Talmud Chacham. A Koilel wife. Not to be believed. Hashem arranged it. It looked so bad, and it was so good. Rev Binaman tells over a story from Rev Reuven Karelenstein. I'll conclude with this. Please forgive me for going a few minutes over time. Rev Reuven Karelenstein was a big magid. He has a sefer called Yechi Reuven, and he was in Bnei Brak, and he was not well. And he had to leave his family for 2 years to come to the States for a kidney transplant. Now, it's a kidney transplant. He was online to wait for a donor. It's a very not simple procedure. You always have to be on call because they can call at any moment. Someone had a car accident, they're about to die, they donated their organs. It's not so simple. He's always on call. He was in America, in New York, for 2 years, and nothing was forthcoming. Nothing happened. So an Askan, someone who's involved in these issues, came to him and says, you know, better to go to a different place. New York is not the right place for this. Let's relocate to San Francisco. There, I guess more people, it's more relevant to get a donor quicker, won't be as complicated. And Rev Karelenstein agreed. Now, the trip to San Francisco, you can get all kinds of flights. They took a flight which brought them into San Francisco 3 a.m. in the morning. 3 a.m. in the morning, he didn't have time to call back to Eretz Yisrael to tell his mishpacha everything was okay. He went to sleep. Him and the Askan were very tired. They were in a hotel before they found a more permanent place for lodging. And at 6 a.m. in the morning, there was banging on the door. Karelenstein, this is the police! Karelenstein! Karelenstein, open the door! He opens the door. And the police are there. They said they're looking for him throughout the city. They didn't know where he was. Karelenstein, Karelenstein. His wife had called frantically trying to get a hold of him because they found a kidney donor. And while he was in transit, the kidney donor, they found it. And the rule is that they give the kidneys to the next online, one kidney, and they wait 2 hours. If they can't find the person who needs the kidney, they go on to the next person on the list. 15 minutes later, they give out the second kidney to the next person on the list. So Rav Karelenstein, while he was in transit, because he didn't call home at 3 a.m. when he came in, he lost the opportunity that he's waiting for 2 years, to get kidneys. So the Askan was miserable. He felt terrible. He was devastated. He made Rev Karelenstein go to San Francisco, and he made him lose out on what he's waiting for 2 years. What did Rev Karelenstein do? Rabbi Yisai, if it was one of us, we could have thought, maybe, look what Hashem did, bedafka. I'm waiting here for 2 years for a kidney, and Hashem bedafka brings it when I can't get it. Hashem is out, chas v'shalom, not for my toiva. That's certainly what one can think. Many of us think it all the time. when this goes wrong, and when that goes wrong, and when we want this so badly, we want that so badly, and it all works out wrong, different than how we want. And we're angry, and we're resentful. We don't show it outside, chas v'shalom, we come to daven, but in our hearts we have what we call complaints. We have a complaint. We're upset at Hashem. What did Rav Karelenstein do? Rabbi said, Tzadik Yisoid Olam. He started singing and dancing. Baruch Hashem! Baruch Hashem, I didn't get these kidneys! Baruch Hashem, I'm so thrilled! The Askin's looking at him as if he's gone out of his mind. What? You're thrilled? You didn't? Yes, because if I didn't get them, it's a sign that they weren't destined for me. They're not good for me. Baruch Hashem, Hashem didn't give me them. Obviously, they're not good for me. Haydu l'Hashem ki toiv ki lailam chazdai. It sounds so ridiculous, Rabbi Sai. He didn't give him something that he's waiting for 2 years. What's not good for him? No. If Hashem didn't give it to me, then it's a sign it wasn't good for me. Chaste Hashem ki lai samnu. Okay, the Askin, you know, he didn't. It was a very interesting way of reacting to this episode. The Askin didn't appreciate it so much. 6 weeks later, he says, "You know what? Out of curiosity, I'd like to check out if what happened to the people that got the kidneys. What happened with those kidneys?" And he checked out. Both people that received the kidneys were nifter, because the kidneys were infected, and no one knew. The donor of the kidneys was an alcoholic, and his liver was infected, and it brought the infection to the entire body, and they didn't know. And they brought the kidneys, and the kidneys killed the ones who received them. If Hashem doesn't give us something, it means it's poison for us. So one of two things, Rabbi Yisai, if you come out from this class, and you can daven for what you want, and you could be happy for what you don't get. And you can do both together. It's a long arichus, I can't go into it. But it can sweeten your life. When things go wrong already, I'm not talking about, we'll daven for things that didn't happen yet, and we'll be happy for things that happened already. I'll give you a simon to remember, two simonim. Hashem melech, Hashem malach, Hashem imloich la'ilam voed. You make Hashem for the king now, present tense, melech. You make Hashem for the king Moloch from before. How do you make Hashem for the king on what happened already? How do you make Hashem for the king in the past, when the past has passed? How do you do that? The answer is, says Rabbi Avram Shor in the Sefer Lekech V'Halibov, the grandson of Rabbi Gedalia Shor, the son of Gedalia Shor, he says, you accept what has already happened b'simcha. And then you're making Hashem for the king on what happened already. Hashem Moloch. So make Hashem for the king by accepting, by trusting him. By knowing that if I didn't get it, and if it went wrong, it didn't go wrong, it's poison. If it went wrong, it's not wrong with the lady for 15 years, it's right. Just it's better than what I think I know. Because Hashem knows better than me, and He wants for my toiva more than I do. And secondly, if it didn't happen yet, daven for it. I'll just conclude with one thought. Vayu chayei Sarah, mea shana ve'esim shana ve'sheva shanim, kulam shovim l'toiva. Says Rav Shor, that's Sarah's life. Her life was like that. She had many difficult times. She had many good times. Throughout all the times, she was shoveh. She was always accepting and trusting and thanking Hashem for the good and for the not good. The Avos were called Yesharim in Chazal. Straight. How do you, something is straight? He goes, a song has high notes and low notes. But when you keep singing the song and you put the high notes and the low notes together and you go straight with the song, then it becomes a song. If you take the high notes when things go right, and the low notes when things go wrong, and you go with it yashar, straight, then the letters yashar become sheer. You can sing. You can go through life singing. if something goes wrong and it didn't happen yet, you can daven for it. And if something goes wrong and it didn't happen, you can be full of hope. And if something goes wrong and it happened already, you can accept it with simcha. And be'ezus Hashem, you live happy lives. Thank you.
And that is it.